These two provisions here also show that MIFA makes everybody keep it top of mind, the fact that prudent investing includes being prudent about the costs you incur when you are investing, and also that you can't just take things at face value. There's some basic due diligence that's required. And I was thinking of this provision ever since FTX collapsed. I don't know if nonprofits were invested in FTX. I know some pension funds were. But I was thinking if they were, you know, how would they have satisfied that? You know, I think FTX didn't have audited financials. What was the due diligence that they could have done that would have sufficed? And while it might be a pat thing to say, I think what the law is doing here is it's trying to give nonprofits a roadmap to avoid decisions that turn out, in retrospect, to have been driven really by hype. So this is where we get to the part of MIFA that everybody remembers, the 8 prudence factors. Nonprofits are required to consider these specific factors when managing and investing their funds. New York law goes even further and requires nonprofits to have a written investment policy setting these forth and along with the other requirements of MIFA. And what we're going to see in a minute is how they mirror the factors on spending from endowment funds. I just wanted to show these other additional provisions that essentially require thinking things through holistically. And what they do is remind us that being passive, say, for example, just accepting stock that you received as a gift and holding it, that's not acceptable because prudent investing requires active analysis. With regard to diversification, in New York, there's a special provision that a decision not to diversify has to be reviewed at least annually. Of course, it's not spelled out exactly what is meant by diversification, and that brings us back again to this question of community standards and community norms. The law also recognizes that the vast majority of nonprofits are going to need to delegate investment management, including to third parties like Chris. And what the delegation provisions in the law do are to clarify the responsibilities that still lie with the organization that has delegated the responsibility. And what still lies with the organization is that you have to act prudently in selecting the agent, establishing their scope and terms, and monitoring how they're doing. New York, of course, has some additional tricky provisions. Helpfully, though, the law clarifies that an institution that prudently does this, that prudently delegates, will not be liable for the decisions or actions of an agent to which the function was delegated. Okay, now I'm going to move to the spending side of MIFA. And this slide shows the basic standard for endowment spending. And there are a few things I want to unpack in here. First, what is an endowment fund? It's a fund that, by the terms of the gift instrument establishing it, has restricted the fund to spending only income or says it needs to be maintained in perpetuity, language indicating that it's meant to be perpetual. Note that this is not the colloquial meaning of endowment, like when you talk about a private foundation's endowment, which generally refers to the overall assets of the organization. Second, note that the law talks about an endowment fund in the singular. So what's tricky about that is I don't know a single public charity that just has one endowment fund, right? They have hundreds, thousands. And in New York, the Attorney General's office has made clear that the statutory analysis has to happen at the level of each endowment fund. You can group the funds together, but you have to explain why you've come to that decision and why you're doing the grouping that you're doing. It also means, I think, from a very practical standpoint in terms of how you manage your endowment funds, that when you're analyzing spending, you have to be very careful to look at similarly situated funds. Because, for instance, a fund that was established by a donor long ago who's dead, that just sort of carries on and spends according to your spending policy every year, that fund is in a very different situation from an endowment fund established by a living donor who's still contributing to that fund annually, because those new contributions coming in are going to make it look like the fund is spending less than it's actually spending when compared to a fund that doesn't have those types of inflows. Third, this standard, it's not actually about the moment that you spend, but when you appropriate for spend, which means when the decision is made that the funds will be spent. And that's usually when you approve your budget or when you approve your spending plan. Fourth, this is not just about spending. It's also about not spending. In other words, just in the same way that you can't take in property and just keep it passively and not make a decision about what to do with it, you can't just assume that you're going to spend the funds or spend at the same rate as you were spending last year, because maybe instead you should be making a decision to let them accumulate. Lastly, this is the same prudence standard as on the investing side, which we're going to see more clearly here, or virtually the same. So these seven factors are very, very similar to those we just went through on the investing side. And in fact, the four that I highlighted there are identical. And the seventh factor, the factor at the bottom here, expressly yokes spending and investing together, saying that you have to consider your investment policy when you're determining your endowment spending. And Chris may have more to say on this, but my understanding is that organizations have approached this linkage from both directions. Either they determine the average return they think they can prudently expect from their investment portfolio, and then they tailor their spending policy to reflect that.